For those of you joining us now, I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Friday Media Roundtable. We are podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. And if you have a show idea for us, you can drop us a line at yourcall@kalw.org, or you can call us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-TALK. 8255. Well, now I want to welcome Shoshana Walter to the show. Shoshana is an award-winning investigative reporter and a staff writer for the Marshall Project and a former senior reporter at Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting, where she examined the armed guard industry and trafficking on marijuana farms, among other stories. Shoshana is also the lead reporter in a new Marshall Project investigation. And this is a really shocking but accurate title. It's "She Ate a Poppy Seed Salad Just Before Giving Birth, Then They Took Her Baby Away." It focuses on how hospitals across the United States are separating parents from their children over false positive drug test results. Now, this article was published in partnership with the Marshall Project, a nonprofit news organization covering the U.S. criminal justice system, Mother Jones, and USA Today. You can also hear an audio podcast of her reporting at Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. So welcome to the program, Shoshana, and thank you so much for this really important and yet underreported story.
Thanks so much for having me, Ethan. I appreciate it.
And I should also mention your colleagues, Weihua Lee, Andrew Rodriguez Calderon, Nakila Carter, and Catherine Odom, who also contributed to the story. So Shoshana, let's just start by asking, it's such a troubling story, given that thousands of mothers, parents could be separated from their babies based on false test results. And I want to delve into that, but first just wanted to ask how you found out about this problem in the first place.
Yeah, I did a story when I was at Reveal, for Reveal, the radio show, and the New York Times Magazine about women who are in recovery from opioid addiction going on doctor-prescribed Suboxone or methadone and then going to give birth and being reported to child welfare authorities because they were on these prescribed medications. And that's in part due to this federal law that we could talk about later. But when I was hearing about this, it just got me curious about the process through which hospitals identify mothers who are taking prescription medications or substances, period. And what I learned about this process is that many hospitals, most hospitals that drug test pregnant women or people who come in to give birth, are using urine drug screens that have extremely high false positive rates, as high as 50%. And they're using these screens because they're fast and they're cheap, but there's actually no law in any state that requires hospitals to confirm the results of urine drug screens with a more definitive test. So the tests that hospitals are relying on to identify women who have used substances during pregnancy are very prone to error and false positive results.
Well, lots to delve in there, but I just want to talk a bit about your process for just uncovering this story. I understand you worked on the story for a year. And what was involved in just piecing the story together, and what type of support did you receive from the Marshall Project, where you're a staff writer?
Sure. So the first thing I did is really just try to meet parents who's, you know, said that this happened to them. I did that, you know, talking to sources, parent groups, medical providers who are concerned about this issue. I also joined Facebook support groups for parents who have child welfare cases or whose children are in foster care. And one of the first people that I met was this woman who in California who had taken a very commonly prescribed blood pressure medication during pregnancy, labetalol, and claimed that this blood pressure medication had caused her to screen positive for meth when she gave birth. And as a result of that, the agency took her newborn. I was really shocked by that. And to be perfectly honest, I was, you know, a little skeptical. I wondered if this is, if this is, could this actually be true? You know, this is a very common medication for pregnant women. So I would have imagined I'd have heard about this before. So I reached out to a toxicologist who studies this issue, and she said, yes, in fact, this medication has been proven to cause false positives, not only for meth, but also for fentanyl. So that was pretty eye-opening. And from there, it was just a matter of reaching out to as many women as I could and finding women who were in the right, who had the ability and in the right headspace to work with me to get all the documentation that you need in order to kind of verify these stories and figure out exactly what happened.
I can only imagine how traumatic it is, and it's amazing that you're able to work with these women victimized by this really failed process and document those. Let's talk about another story that you described that lends itself to the title of the piece. Susan Horton lives in California, ate this poppy seed salad. Can you just talk about how all of this happened?
Yeah, so Susan gave birth at Kaiser Permanente in Santa Rosa. This hospital actually has a policy of drug testing every person who comes in to give birth. And the night before Susan gave birth, she's a mother of five. She's been a mother for almost 20 years. So very experienced with pregnancy and child rearing. And she was starting to feel contractions. So she decided to have, you know, basically her final meal before going into the hospital to give birth. And that final meal was a frozen pizza and a salad kit from Costco with everything seed dressing. So lots and lots of poppy seeds in the salad dressing. She goes in to give birth and she gives her urine. She didn't know for what purpose, but it was for a drug test. And after giving birth to her daughter, she hears from a provider that her urine was positive for opiates. And eventually she learns that her urine was specifically positive for codeine. Now, that is not unusual, actually, because poppy seeds often contain codeine and morphine. They come from the opium poppy plant. So that's to be expected with poppy seeds. But what Susan's medical records show is that medical providers just did not know what to make of Susan's claims that she had not used drugs, that she ate a poppy seed salad. This was during COVID-19, and Susan's son has a congenital heart defect. So she avoided prenatal care, and that was viewed as kind of a red flag by the hospital. And so despite the fact that Susan insisted she hadn't used drugs, that she had eaten this poppy seed salad, the hospital reported her to child welfare authorities. Child welfare authorities came. Susan declined to let them into her home, interview her other children. She kept on insisting, you know, I didn't use drugs, I ate poppy seeds. To her, it felt like no one believed her. And so right after this conversation, child welfare authorities asked a judge for permission to remove Susan's child, and her newborn was taken from her custody.
It's such a shocking story. And if you're just tuning in, this is Your Calls Friday Media Roundtable. I'm Ethan Elkind, guest hosting for Rose Aguilar. We're speaking with Shoshana Walter, award-winning investigative reporter and a staff writer for the Marshall Project, about her new report. She ate a poppy seed salad just before giving birth, and they took her baby away. And you just heard that story. We also want to hear from you, our listeners. Have you heard of mothers being separated from babies due to these drug testing policies? Do you have thoughts about what should be done to try to fix this system? You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Shoshana, let's talk about this system that's leading to these stories, these outcomes here. Pregnant women being tested for drugs before delivery of their babies. Is this a standard procedure for every woman who is about to give birth, either in California or the United States as a whole?
You know, it's different from hospital to hospital, but what I learned from talking with experts is that urine drug testing is ubiquitous across the United States. It's really it really started increasing, starting with the crack epidemic, and then during the opioid epidemic, the use of drug testing expanded as well. So some hospitals try not to drug test. Some hospitals drug test every single patient who comes in to give birth. Other hospitals, they have certain criteria that they use to flag who gets drug tested. So for example, you know, a woman who comes in with certain medical conditions, like maybe she comes in with premature labor or has high blood pressure or even bad teeth, that could be a flag for a drug test. A history of substance use or limited prenatal care, that's a flag to drug test. And then other hospitals, it's totally up to the judgment of individual providers. And that comes along with a lot of class and race bias. What studies have found again and again is that Black women, Latinx women, Indigenous women, and women on Medicaid are much more likely to be drug tested and much more likely to have their children removed as a result of that. So the policies are really all over the map. But what I did learn is that it's very common to be drug tested when you go in to give birth.
Yeah, but it does seem like a very unscientific and fraught with bias kind of process based on what you're describing. Can you talk about some of the common foods and medications? You've already mentioned a few of those that could prompt erroneous results. I mean, what should pregnant women know about in terms of what they're eating or what their kind of medication they're taking to avoid having this happen? I mean, it seems crazy to have to even ask what women need to do to avoid having their babies seized from them after birth. But what should they be aware of in terms of those prompting these false positive results?
I mean, there are actually a lot of medications that can cause false positive results on these tests, but some very common ones are the blood pressure medication that I described, labetalol, and some other blood pressure medications. Prescribed Zoloft can cause a false positive test for benzodiazepines. Over-the-counter medications like nasal inhalers, decongestants, Zantac, which is used for heartburn and acid reflux, often by pregnant women, those can also cause false positives for meth. And then, of course, you have poppy seeds. Poppy seeds are in everything from muffins to bagels to bread. I just picked up a challah this morning with poppy seeds, and they were in Susan Horton's salad. And that is a huge cause of positive results. This is such a big problem that last year, the Department of Defense actually advised service members to stop eating poppy seeds altogether, because of how often they cause positive results for opiates.
And Shoshana, I also wanted to ask about this type of policy of just drug testing mothers. Is this unique to the United States? Do we see this in other countries? I'm just curious if your reporting has uncovered any other jurisdictions as a comparison to what's happening here.
You know, I really did not look at other countries, but just I know from having reported on addiction policy in the United States for many years that the U.S. is pretty unique in its approach to identifying people who have addiction problems and then responding to them in a more punitive manner. I mean, what I have heard again and again from people who study this issue is that it's the best way to really identify a pregnant woman who might have a drug problem is earlier on in pregnancy, with conversations between provider and patient. And oftentimes it's simply a questionnaire that is better at identifying someone who has a chronic substance use problem than a single drug test, which at most can identify recent use.
And I know that you followed up with Kaiser and Sonoma City officials to find out what happened specifically with the example of the patient Horton that you just talked about, and that the Sonoma County Human Services Department said in a statement that it evaluates all referrals using, quote, evidence and research-based methods. But can you talk about what this investigative process involves, what is going wrong here, and what could be done to make sure that officials are not targeting the wrong people?
Certainly. So one of the areas of reporting I really dove into is how are these drug tests used in other circumstances? And what I found is that in when people are drug tested in the workplace, for example, by law, they're often entitled to certain procedures that protect them from the consequences of a false positive drug test. So, in most states, when a child welfare worker, for example, tests positive for drugs on the job, they are entitled to a confirmation test, you know, the second more definitive test that can really say for sure what substance a person may have used. And they're also entitled to a review from a specially trained doctor who can interview the person and find out what they might have eaten or what medication they might have taken that could have caused that positive result. And that often prevents employees from wrongful termination or suspension for alleged drug use. In these instances, the women who test positive for drugs at the hospital, and even after CPS becomes involved, they're typically not entitled to those protections. And so in Susan Horton's case, at Kaiser, they did this second more definitive test, which found codeine in her system. But because she had eaten poppy seeds, that wouldn't actually have been enough to determine whether or not she ingested an illicit substance or whether her claims were accurate. And so a second test called a test for the compound thebaine would have allowed providers to really have more of a sense of whether what she was saying was true. And so Susan was kind of shunted into this system where she was claiming that she used poppy seeds, a legitimate claim, and yet none of the people who encountered her case went a step further to really determine whether or not what she was saying was true. Once child welfare authorities become involved, they're required to investigate. They're required to determine whether there's a risk to the child. And so she kind of had to just go through that system in order for CPS to find her not a risk to her child. And then the case was closed and her newborn was returned to her.
Well, I do want to talk about that process, but first, just want to remind listeners you're listening to Your Calls Friday Media Roundtable. This is Ethan Elkind sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and we're speaking with Shoshana Walter, award-winning investigative reporter and a staff writer for the Marshall Project. We're talking about drug testing new mothers and false positive results that's leading hospitals to separate babies from their mothers. And I wanted to ask you on this process here. What happens to the babies once they are reported to child welfare agencies? Where do they go, and how do the mothers end up getting them back?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of babies, they're able to remain with their families. You know, in a lot of these cases, the experiences were traumatic but short-lived. You know, CPS came to these women's homes or these families' homes. They'll typically inspect that home, make sure there's food in the refrigerator, the lights are on, there's electricity, there's a place for the baby to sleep. They'll interview other kids or other people who live in that home. They might require the mom to drug test again to make sure there's nothing in her system, and then the case is closed. In other cases, babies may be placed in foster care with strangers. In Susan's case, they were placed with the her daughter was placed with her grandparents. Susan was not allowed to be alone with her daughter. Her husband was also not allowed to be alone with her daughter. In other cases, you know, CPS may assign someone who might be called a quote unquote protector, and that is a responsible adult who must supervise the parents at all times with their kids until the CPS investigation is closed, at which point they're allowed to have their child back unsupervised. But you know, these cases can take months, sometimes longer, and it's a huge intrusion on a family's life, and it can cause a real crisis of confidence among these new moms, some of whom, you know, are very experienced, and some of whom are doing this for the first time and are starting their journey as a parent, feeling ashamed and guilty and discredited.
Well, and also the impacts on the babies that are, you know, its initial few days, few weeks, months are just so critical, early childhood development. What do these mothers have to do to try to clear their names? What's the process there?
I mean, basically just comply with every request that's made by the agency or by a court. They're often required to drug test, allow child welfare authorities to interview other people in their lives, submit to regular home inspections, which may or may not be random. You know, it's what I heard from CPS workers and from parents is that the agency often responds better to parents when they're cooperative, rather than putting up a fight or advocating for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes what parents are hearing then is the only way to get out of this situation, this infuriating, upsetting situation, is just to go through it.
Mm-hmm. So, Shoshana, what should be done here to reform the system? I mean, I'm assuming that people you've spoken to have different ideas. I mean, it seems like in some ways that the abstract, a laudable goal to try to intervene if there is a mother who could potentially pose a risk to a baby based on drug addiction. But are there things that we could be doing to try to reform the system, to try to ensure that we're not letting bias and these false positive test results influence how the government is in some cases seizing children from their parents?
That's a really good question. I mean, in my reporting, I actually encountered this report that came out in the early 90s from a federal medical advisory committee. And this report actually recommended that providers adopt the same standards as workplace drug testing. When workplace drug testing was first introduced and really got going in earnest during the Reagan administration, there was a lot of uproar about drug tests and how workers were getting fired over false positive results. And so workplace drug testing regulations really developed with the civil rights protections in mind for workers. It's now very difficult for a worker who's entitled to these protections to be fired over a false positive test. There are safeguards there. So this advisory committee all the way back in the 90s was actually recommending that the same standards be adopted for pregnant women. And that just did not occur. There's not a single state that requires those safeguards for pregnant women. So what I heard from experts time and again is that those safeguards would go a long way towards preventing birthing patients from experiencing the harms and consequences of faulty drug testing.
Well, Shoshana, I just wanted to close by asking you about the media angle on this. This was an amazing amount of time and resources that you were able to dedicate to covering this story. And without those resources, we wouldn't be hearing about this. We wouldn't be able to have you on the program to talk about it. So can you talk about the Marshall Project and the support you got and what this really says and the implications for the media industry to be able to support reporting on stories like this?
Yes, I mean, I first started the story when I was at Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. And then I moved to the Marshall Project where I continued this reporting. Both organizations put a lot of time and resources into producing this journalism. In addition to this radio story, there was also an hour-long radio show where you can hear directly from the women themselves about how this impacted them. And it just, you know, it takes a lot of time and resources to not only find women who have experienced this and to build trust with those women, to ensure that their stories are told accurately and ethically. But we also filed public records requests in every single state for policies and laws related to drug testing. And that's what allows us to say with certainty that there's not a single state that requires confirmation testing for these urine drug tests.
Well, just really appreciate you reporting on this. Shoshana Walter, award-winning investigative reporter, staff writer for the Marshall Project. Thank you for coming on Your Call and for all your work on this issue.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's our show. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihei Razazan produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.